Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the DX Mentor podcast, all about 6 meters. Thank you for joining us. I'm Bill, age 8B, the DX Mentor. In this episode, we will attend a detailed discussion on operating 6 meters, including antennas, equipment, propagation, hopefully everything you'll need to know to either continue your climb up the DX ladder on 6 meters or to try out this band known as the Magic Band. My guests are Dave, KJ9I, and Joe, W8GEX. This episode is sponsored by ICOM America, makers of the finest radios and accessories for your amateur radio station. By the Daily DX, the best source for real-time DX information. And by DX Engineering, your one-stop shop for equipment, accessories, and technical knowledge. This episode is also sponsored by the Southwest Ohio DX Association, one of the premier DX clubs in the nation. I received an excellent email from Greg, KM5GT. Greg was commenting on the CQ Marathon episode we did several weeks ago. It seems that our discussion lit a fire under Greg, and he's now off and running. Congratulations to you, Greg, on your success and all that you've achieved this year. Keep me in the loop. We have some sad news from the DX community. Bob Heil, K9EID, founder of Heil Communications, passed away. I had the opportunity to meet Bob at the Dayton Hamvention many years ago. I was just buying a foot switch and just happened to ask the guy at the end of the booth about it. What a great conversation we had about all things ham radio. And yes, I did buy the foot switch. Here's what was posted on the Heil Communications Facebook page. Quote, "Today we say goodbye to our beloved founder, Dr. Bob Heil. Bob fought a valiant year-long battle with cancer and passed away peacefully surrounded by his family. Bob's impact on professional and live sound cannot be overstated. Driven by a lifelong passion for sound, Bob's pioneering work revolutionized how concertgoers experienced live sound. Bob created and developed numerous pro sound innovation and products over the years, some of which are preserved in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum. In 2007, Bob was the recipient of the Audio Innovator Pernelli Award, recognizing his outstanding influence on the live sound industry. Countless artists, creators, broadcasters, podcasters, and sound engineers, as well as sound professionals worldwide, continue to be impacted by Bob's work. While Bob's presence will be dearly missed, we are immensely proud and happy to honor and carry on his legacy." End quote. Bob will be missed. So let's tune into our gurus and find out all about 6 meters. So hello and welcome to the DX Mentor podcast. Today we're really excited to have KJ9I Dave with us, and we're going to talk about all things 6 meters. And when we're done today, you'll be ready to get on the magic band and have an experience that's different than any other experience you've had, I think. So with us, we have Joe, W-A-G-E-X. Joe, you want to say good morning?
Well, good morning to everyone. And I'm really looking forward to this podcast because I've been a 60-meter guy since I got my technician in 1970. And I have always been hooked on 6 meters. So I just love it. And I'm certainly looking forward to this, Dave.
Okay. And we have our guru, Dave, KJ9I. Dave, tell us a little bit about yourself. How'd you get into ham radio? How'd you get into DX? And then how did you get into 6 meters?
Well, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Dave Schmolker. I'm a double E by degree with a business degree. Worked in communications much of my career. Currently teach electronics. A passionate DXer, having been on a handful of DX expeditions across the years. How did I get into ham radio? In junior high school, I was invited to get a license by a junior high school teacher. And I thought, ooh, this one's going to be popular with all the ladies. This is junior high, right? So I went to started going to classes, and voila, it grew on me. Once I heard and worked my first DX station, that's what became a magnet to make me a DXer forever. It was a station in France that I worked with, a Heathkit HW8. What were they, 2 or 3 watts, using a dipole on the top of a two-story house, and that hooked me. I thought, wow, you can work France from that piece of wire with 2 or 3 watts. And so since then, I've been working on DXing, and I joined the 6 meter effort a bit late. When I was in college in the mid 1980s, there was a one of the students that was really into 6 meters, and he was so passionate about it that it was almost annoying. So at the time, I didn't go there. But later, I joined into the 6 meter effort, and wow, it's really exciting. The magic band, as you say, Bill, that's what it is. So,
Is it about six that's appealing, though? Is it different than if I'm on 20 meters, for instance?
Sure. Well, I think what six adds is the explosive propagation modes that are sometimes near impossible to predict. I mean, there are people out there that say, oh, I can predict this, I can predict that. And yet we get openings from someplace to someplace else that just totally surprise us. For example, half hour ago from right now, I was looking at FT8, and 3 Bravo 9 Fox Radio was in there. And he was pretty loud and working guys in this part of the country. That does not happen all the time.
Wow. That was one of the things I've heard about six, is that when it's hot, it's really hot and it's really amazing. And then, man, when it's gone, it's gone. So it's a lot has to do with timing and luck, I suppose.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is very hard to predict when it's going to happen. And there are times when you will get openings. I remember one time I was at my job. At the time, I worked for a cellular company in Madison, Wisconsin, which is about 1 hour drive from my home. And I remember that there was I believe this was in the 2000 to 2001 cycle peak. We had an opening to KH0, Mariana Islands. Well, that was exciting as all get out. So I heard about that somehow via the internet. I wrapped up my job. I went racing home on the interstate I usually don't speed much, but I was speeding that day. So I get home just in time to find out the opening had just ended.
Oh,
so sometimes it's heartbreak also. It's just very exciting, kind of an emotional roller coaster.
So in that example, when you say an opening to the Marianas, is that an opening to Asia, or is it really kind of a specific area?
I would say a specific area, and that was likely F2 propagation, which is one of the modes, although there had to be some sporadic E to this also, because it went away, right? It was only for a certain duration, and then it's gone. I mean, that's what makes 6 meters, the magic band, so interesting, is you will oftentimes have multiple propagation modes that have to work together, and the clouds for sporadic E, for example, have to be in the right location in order to set up propagation from one location to another. And that also sets up spotlight propagation. And basically what that means is, as you can imagine, you will have a very small, maybe dime-sized geographic area that has propagation to some DX station, for example, and nobody else, even the neighbors around that North America guy 20 or 30 miles away, have that propagation. Wow. Sometimes those clouds will move. So if you just sit there and keep watching that DX, sometimes if you're lucky, it'll move your way. Other times, all your buddies work the DX and you don't come up with a good score. So it's all of that typifies 6 meters.
So let's go back a minute and talk about F2 versus sporadic, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all propagation modes for I hope we've got a lot of folks tuning in now that are going to say, boy, I'm interested in six, but these aren't terms familiar to me. So how would you break those down?
Well, yeah, that's a great topic, Bill. The propagation modes that are unique to 6 meters include sporadic E, and briefly, that involves the E layer of the ionosphere, roughly 70 miles up, that is ionized or charged up. And typically in the summers, that will, when you have storm activity, that will enable about 1,400 to 15-mile hops of propagation. So basically, the North America station will go up to that E cloud and then back to Earth and come down about 1,500 miles away. That's single hop sporadic E. You can get multi-hop, and oftentimes that, for example, will go from W9 land over to Echo Alpha 8, for example, Canary Islands. And then another part of the sporadic E, you can get rare hops that are 500 to 1,000 miles, short hop. That allows you to work places that you wouldn't otherwise normally get, like the path from from here to Brazil, or I'm sorry, to Bolivia is very difficult, and because it's it requires a short hop. In addition to sporadic E, there's meteor scatter. Meteor scatter is where the E layer of the ionosphere gets charged up or ionized by meteor tails, and then you bounce signals off of those meteors. Now, there are meteor showers in certain times of the year, and I've got a listing of those if you want to hear those. But meteor scatter is another mode of propagation. Then there's tropospheric ducting. That's you get an abrupt refractive index change in the atmosphere at the boundary between air masses of different temperature and humidity layers, and that makes a duct where the signal will travel. So that's tropospheric ducting. And the other one that Joe mentioned, transequatorial propagation, sometimes called TEP or TEP, that's where you have highly ionized distortion of the ionosphere over the magnetic equator. And what that does is it sets up north-south propagation across the equator, primarily in October, November, March, April. Two more. Line of sight, of course, that's 20 to 30 miles, you know, ground wave. And then finally, F2, which is another layer of the ionosphere, that typically requires very high solar activity to charge up that layer, like we had in 2000 to 2001, sunspot number greater than 200 for many days in a row. And what that sets up is kind of that longer path propagation. For example, I was able to work F2 from W9 into Zimbabwe, Africa. That was on CW, so that was back in those days. Weaker signals and a higher antenna works better for those, but that's F2 propagation. So sporadic E, meteor scatter, tropospheric ducting, transequatorial propagation, line of sight, F2. Those are the primary modes and sometimes you'll get some of each. Then you got to figure out, okay, which one was it? And sometimes you get people debating which one was it or which combination. And it's not always easy to figure out.
Wow. I just put up my first beam a month ago. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, forward versus pointing it reverse in the opposite direction. Joe, go ahead.
So I had a good friend, unfortunately, he just passed away a year ago, big 6-meter DXer. And he lives, I don't know, 35 miles away from me. And he would be working stuff, David. And I'm just here going out of my mind. My band is dead. And I would call him up on the phone. And I say, John, are you really working those guys? Or are you just putting a show on? And then that would happen to me. I would be working, say, JAs, or not JAs, but whoever, the Caribbean. And he would call and he says, I don't hear a thing. And I always consider him to be the big guy. So it goes right back to what you're saying. And it seems like in some cases that could be across town, where one fellow could be hearing it and a guy across the town 10 miles or less away may not. So is that true?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely right, Joe. And that can be kind of frustrating when you're sitting there waiting for an opening. I will tell you, I have also seen the following happen. When I'm hoping for that propagation to arrive at my front door, if you will, I watch the stations that are, if it's coming from Europe, I watch the guys just to the east of me. NHJX is a friend, Terry. He's in Michigan, just across Lake Michigan from where I am. And when he starts seeing stuff, it's get ready, because usually a little bit later in the morning or into the day, if he's got propagation, it's usually the case that can slide to the west. Not always. And here's the other thing that will drive us crazy. Sometimes it'll start at in east of us, maybe N8JX gets propagation. He's working something terrific. And then all of a sudden it skips right over me. And then the zeros to my west got propagation and they're rocking the house. And then you go, what about me? Because you're kind of stuck in the middle and it's hopping right over your head.
Yes.
That also happens frequently. Or there are stations, in my case, I'm in Wisconsin. There are some friends that are in central Illinois who are enough south of me that they will get propagation, but it won't come quite this far north. So It's a really fascinating aspect of 6 meters, and sometimes it can be wide range openings, and other times it's spotlight or dime size stuff. And that's just the nature of the band.
Let's take a break to learn about the Daily DX.
Hey, I just poured you a cup of coffee. You look pretty happy. How'd you do?
I worked him on the third call. Can you believe it?
You worked him on the third call? Seriously? I thought you just had that little pistol station.
I do, but I have a secret weapon.
A secret weapon? What is it?
Information. I knew when they were on the air, their operating habits. Heck, I even knew the equipment they're using. I just had to be there when they came up on the band. I even beat the spotting network.
Wow, how'd you manage all that?
I get the Daily DX from Bernie, W3UR. In addition to the weekly and daily bulletins, I also receive special notices when things change in real time. I feel that I'm always on top of every de-expedition.
So now you just need to confirm it, right?
Yep, that's it. Bernie even helps me with that, giving me QSL routes and QSL managers if they don't use LOTW. The Daily DX is a DX bulletin sent via email to you Monday through Friday. It includes DX news, IOTA news, QSN reports, QSL information, a DX calendar, propagation forecast, and much, much more. With a subscription to the Daily DX, you will also receive DX news flashes and other interesting DX tidbits. Bernie's been an integral part of my confirming over 300 entities and WAZ while operating a modest station.
W3UR Bernie is the editor, a member of the DX Honor Roll, a member of the 3000 Challenge Club, as well as the editor of the How's DX column in QST. He is uniquely positioned to have his finger on the pulse of the DX community and shares this information weekly. Why not let Bernie be your secret weapon?
You can get a free 2-week trial at www.dailydx.com.
Now let's go have that cup of coffee and tune around.
Holy.
So Dave, what would you say about antennas? I've got a six element cruise craft.
Okay.
But I had a friend, unfortunately he passed away also, but he had four towers at different elevations. Mm-hmm. So maybe one tower would be at 25 feet and the next one at 40 and 60 and so forth. So is there reasoning behind all that? What do we do about antennas?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question also, Joe. Well, antennas could be a topic for an hour by itself, but I'll do my best to make an executive summary. It depends what you want to do. You can work stations. Some guys work station with something as simple as a loop or a simple dipole. I will tell you, one of my favorite Moonbounce contacts was with ZL1RS, and he's a terrific friend and Moonbounce guy. During one of the Moonbounce contests I was on, and he called me using a dipole to see if I could hear him, and I worked him. Now, that to me is incredible that there was enough effective radiated power. Now, keep in mind there were other things in play at play there. Bob is a very smart Moonbounce guy. He timed that so that it was at my moon set, which overlapped with his moon rise, which gave you 15 or 20 extra dB on both ends of the path, right? But the point is, you don't always need bigger antennas. Now, that being said, the first antenna I ever put up on the band, and this is in the 1990s, was at the time an M squared 6M 2.5 WLC, basically a 50-foot boom antenna. Just because I'm a DXer, I wanted to go in big. But I will also tell you that there are a lot more stations out there that have four element, five element, six elements. There's a guy that's in Vietnam. This gentleman is Eddie. XV1X was his former call. I think a lot of guys know him because he's also a big HF guy. Well, he's blind and he is currently working Moonbounce. I was able to work him when he had a four element Yagi. Because we timed it at his moonrise, and he currently put up a little bigger antenna. I think he's got an eight-element Yagi up now. But you can do really fun things with smaller antennas, including a four-element Yagi. There's a guy on 3 Delta 2 Alpha Golf, who has a, I think it's a 5 or 6 element Yagi, and many of the folks have worked him. So boy, with antennas, there's just such a wide range of antennas you can use. Before I put up my current moon bounce array, I had a single 10 element Yagi. That was a loop fed array, an LFA, on a 58-foot boom. Okay, now that in itself is a long boom, but I had that up, and then I've typically gone with antennas in that size region because I really want to have all the gain I can get. But there are a lot of guys that do very well with 7 element antennas, 9 element antennas. So unfortunately, you ask, okay, what about antennas? It's complicated. That's the most direct answer I can give you. And it depends what you want to do. If you want to do DXing, do you want to do sporadic E? Very different requirements. And about the height above ground also depends. And the gentleman that you know that had antennas at different heights, that can be a beautiful thing because the elevation angle, the takeoff angle, varies. I've heard good guidance that says if you want kind of a one size fits all, put an antenna in one place, 50 feet is a pretty good height for sporadic E combined with, maybe a little F2 once in a while. My current, I've got an LFA 9 that's up at 90 feet. So I've got it up a little higher, but some would say that's too high unless you're trying to do F2. F2 is lower angle, so the higher height above ground helps you. So it depends.
My tower is 55 feet for my VHF, so my 6 meter beam is about 55 feet.
Beautiful.
And when we're talking about 6 meters, when we talk about an element, we're not talking about one of those 30 and 40 foot wide elements that you see on 20 or something like that. The boom is one thing, but the actual element size is significantly less than that, right? So I can get away with a smaller footprint beam and still get some game over just a standard dipole or something like that.
Absolutely. The lambda, the wavelength, equals C over F. There's the equation. C is the speed of light, F is the frequency. And what that basically says is to build a half wavelength element like would be used on a Yagi, it's a little bit short of 10 feet in total length or width. Yes.
I can remember in the late 60s and early 70s, my dad was into 6 meters and he had one of those halos on the car and all that stuff. But he used to come into the living room and he'd say, "Hey, throw on channel 6 out of Columbus." And we were in Cincinnati, so we would take that outside radio or I would hold the aluminum wire and move around. But anyway, we'd point at Columbus, and if we could see that ghost image, then it was like, okay, 6 meters is either about to open or about to close, and then he would run downstairs. We didn't have spotting networks and stuff, so that was, so I think it was WNBS out of Columbus or something, but that was our spotting network for 6 meters back then. So what have you seen an uptick in activity? So for instance, when I got an FT950 years ago, that had 6 meters on it, and until then I didn't have any 6 meters. And then I have a Flex 6400 now, and it has 6 meters. So I imagine all these radios have 6 meters. Are there people taking advantage of that?
Absolutely, Bill. Yes, that's actually been a huge help and driver to increased 6 meter activity because, as you I'm sure recall, prior to that era, the only way you got on 6 meters was with something like a Drake TR6 or a Swan, something that was dedicated just for 6 meters. Well, a lot of guys didn't or wouldn't do that. So when the next generation, if you will, of radios came out, it included 6 meters in the HF radio, and that was a huge help to driving activity. And I know some of the radios that currently have 6 meters, and there's a huge list of these. But the point is, the HF radios added 6 meters, and that definitely drove 6 meter activity. Just a few examples. Japan Radio Company, one of my favorite radios that was never marketed very well, but they made a radio called the JST-245 that was ergonomically beautiful and had a great receiver in it. That was one of the radios that had HF plus six. ICOM has a number of radios that do this, including some portable options like the IC705. I've got one of those that I plan to use when I do some de-expeditions. The thing is only 3 or 4 pounds. It'll do 5 watts, maybe 10 watts, but it's portable. Ellicraft has 6 meters in their K series radios, K3, K4. Kenwood, Yaesu, all have 6 meters built into the radios. And as you said, Bill, Flex Radio, software defined radios, the Anon radios, they all include 6 meters as well. So yes, you've got six included in all the radios, and we haven't even started talking about amplifiers. They're the same thing there.
Wow, very interesting. So what do I have any different techniques that I want to investigate or think about if I'm going to start my 6 meter journey?
Techniques, yes. It depends where you want to play. As we know, the legacy CW and sideband activity was its own technique, which was exactly the same as what's used on HF, right? And as Joe said earlier, we're DXers, and so we get used to working split frequency, sometimes working pileups. You use those techniques. In addition to that, we now have complements of Joe Taylor, K1JT, and his crew of developers. We have the digital modes that have really opened up an explosion in activity. Originally, that was designed for moon bounce, the WSJT, and then some of the HF folks found, hey, this works pretty good on HF too. And of course, we all know where FT8 went after that. But the techniques for FT8 are, I would say, somewhat straightforward depending on the software used. There are versions of software, at least 4 or 5 of them. There's the WSJT original. There's WSJT improved by a gentleman over in Germany. There's JTDX, which is another version, and of course there's a MSHV by LZ2HV. And so each of those has its own features and maybe technique. And then the other thing I would say is for those that do choose to get into the moon bounce activity, that is something that is definitely doable. You can gain 5 or 10 dB advantage by practicing that before the de-expedition takes off. Okay. And sometimes we see folks that try to start, they travel to this rare Pacific island or whatever, and they first try WSJT on moon bounce. And unfortunately, that typically sees some challenges because they're not quite as practiced in the technique. Moon bounce is finicky. It's difficult, especially on 6 meters, which I would argue is the most difficult of all of the EME bands. And so practice benefits is hugely beneficial there. That's a whole nother tangent we won't go on, but the point is the technique varies depending on, are we doing SSB? Are we doing WSJT? And then on WSJT, are we doing meteor scatter? Are we doing Q65? Are we doing JT65? Are we doing FT8? Slightly different techniques depending on each of those, slightly different transmit durations on each of those. And another thing we should air out here is you have to make sure your amplifier and your feed lines can handle the power because these digital modes are indeed 100% duty cycle. That means things break if they're at all susceptible. So your amplifier has to be extremely robust and handle 100% duty cycle with massive cooling. Your feed lines have to be big enough to handle this. That means no RG58 unless you're running less than 100 watts, right? Because it won't handle the 100% duty cycle. So think that answers the
Yeah,
technique.
yeah, yeah.
It varies with the mode.
Let's pause for a minute to hear from one of our great sponsors. I've been talking about DX engineering for quite a while, and I thought it would be better to have someone who is an avid user and appreciates all that DX engineering does and Tim Duffy does for the ham community. So here's Paul, N6PSE, as he's preparing for his H40 Whiskey Alpha de-expedition.
There's some really terrific organizations and companies out there that sponsor our de-expeditions that really bolster our abilities and really add to that success factor. Tim Duffy and the great folks at DX Engineering are second to none. Just amazing people. And when we contact them, they are very generous and really help us a lot.
Thanks, Paul, for your honest reflection on DX Engineering and how they affect the ham community, and good luck on your upcoming H40 Whiskey Alpha de-expedition. So in my case, I've got the Flex and I have this hex beam I just put up, the K4KAO, and I went ahead and got the 6 meter antenna for that. So and I do watch the cluster, which seems to be the best way if you're not home to kind of find out what's going on. But two things that have occurred to me are this really requires time in the chair. This isn't something you can just come down, tune around, and hear something, right? Unless you're amazingly lucky. But what resources do I have where I can, I'm not going to do EME yet, at least not to our next podcast. So, what can I do to say, okay, I expect there should be propagation here, or is it, I mean, is it somewhat predictive, or is it truly hit or miss, or a combination?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question too, Bill. And the bottom line is, you're right. Time in the chair, much like good fishing requires time on the water, so does 6 meters require time in the chair at the radio. Now, obviously, many of us can't sit at the radio. We work, we have families, other obligations. There are tools that help us stay aware of what's happening. One of my favorites that is useful for finding out what's going on, ON4 Kilo Sierra Tango, ON4 KST, has some internet chat pages, and he's got several of those that are tailored to each of the modes. He's got one that is called Region 2 VHF. That one is aimed at terrestrial FT8 propagation. It's mostly 6 meter guys and some 2 meter that hang out there. ON4 KST also has a EME page, a chat page that is different from the Region 2. That one showcases the 6 meter EME aspect of our hobby. And then there are others like Ping Jockey. I think it's N0JK has Ping Jockey. HB9Q has a chat page that is and Dan HB9Q. Now that's Moonbounce specific, and he covers all the different bands with his chat pages. But the point is, these chat pages are one resource that help us find out what's going on. In addition and beyond that, there's this application. I have not run this yet, but it's called JT Alert. And so what you can do, and I have friends that have done this, you can set up essentially your DXCC want list, and it will send you a text message if there's a spot for something you need. So it will basically text you to let you know what's happening, and then it'll tell you the specifics. And then if you're available, you can zoom to your radio and get on the air. So those are some of the resources. But I would say the internet chat pages are one of the better, bigger resources, for us helping each other to find out what's happening.
Okay, Joe.
Dave, what I have talking about JT Alert, I have mine set up, and my alert noise or sound, if you will, is a bugle.
Wonderful.
So I'll be on 6 meters or whatever band, but since we're on six here today, I'll be on 6 meters and I'll be around the house and I don't have to be in the chair. And when my bugle goes off, my wife will tell you, don't get in the way. And that has worked so many times to get a new one.
Yeah.
The other day I worked ZL7DX.
Nice. Yeah.
Had him on DX alert or JT alert, I'm sorry. Was in the other room, my alert goes off, and I give that guy one call and nailed him.
Wow.
So
Congratulations. That's
yeah,
a
well, thank you. So lucky. But I didn't know that, and I made a side note, I'll check it out today. About the text message, because I could be down the road or out for dinner, and I may have to leave the dinner and head home.
Right.
Trust me, Dave, he would call Janet a taxi if she weren't
Yeah.
done yet to head home.
Okay, well, and that's what 6 meters kind of does to us. You get so into this. And I have a friend that is he's retired and he's able to kind of sit there most of the day. That's a huge advantage for not missing openings. At the same time, there are other days when you're sitting there and nothing happens, right? The band does not open. So the countermeasure for that, I would say, is have something that you can do and work on while you kind of got one ear on the radio bands. And actually, I do that because I teach college. A number of the things that I do, my preparation for classes, sometimes grading, I can do those here at home. So what I will frequently do is turn on the radio, put one set of ears on the band while I'm grading or doing other things. And then if the band cracks wide open, I can quickly pivot over and work stuff. Of course, the other thing that happens is you hear about it when I'm in the middle of doing a lecture. Well, that one I'm going to miss. So that's just how it goes. That's life.
Yeah.
I can see little Johnny getting home and his mom says, how did you do on the test? I don't know. It says 3Y0J on it. I have no idea what grade that is, you know?
Yeah, right.
So is it realistic? So let's say I have the flex here. I've got 100 watts, a two element hex beam. Is DXCC realistic for me? Assuming I have patience and I spend time, and I'm not talking about honor roll. I'm talking about, you know, 100, or let's say 101 just in case. But is that a realistic goal?
I think it's possible. Now, you're asking me to predict the future, Bill, which is kind of like asking, can we predict the stock market? Right. I could give you my guess, but it's likely to be wrong, okay? My gut, my sense is, yes, you could get there, okay? Is it going to take a while? Sure, but we do get openings that are so strong on 6 meters, sometimes sporadic E, sometimes TEP, etc., that yes, there are a lot of countries in South America that you can pick up rather readily. Brazil is one of them because it's so large that you're likely to have propagation to somewhere in Brazil, and there are a lot of active stations there. And then Europe, there are times when we will get openings into Europe that with that sort of an antenna, you will work stations, okay? Now, I'd also say that it's a competitive situation. So if there are others that have an opening that is stronger than yours, sometimes they can work stuff with smaller hardware that you're trying with big hardware and power and can't work because their opening is 10 dB stronger, okay, or 15 or 20 dB stronger. That happens also. So it doesn't always feel fair if you want to go there. But yes, you can work things. And with perseverance, and being there, especially on those big widespread openings, you can work a number of countries. Sometimes you might just want to sit, find an open frequency and call CQ, and you will be amazed. You'll have stations from France, from England, from a whole bunch of, you know, countries in Europe coming back to you. So possible, yes. You know, readily doable within 2 years, that's probably more unlikely.
Okay, that's fair.
Possible, yeah.
So I've been doing that pursuit on 160, and that is not for the faint of heart. So, you know, I'm into it for the long term. I'm not looking to get 100, you know, this month. But so I assume the Werkdahl zones is actually more difficult because it is more worldwide than just getting your first 100.
Well, it depends. If you're willing to use the moon, it makes it easy because that's what makes it. That's what puts those far on the other side of the globe places within reach, because the moon's a reflector for those. But for regular terrestrial propagation, Werkdahl zones can be more difficult depending on your QTH here, right? And the propagation that we get.
And then Werkdahl states, I can get Alaska and Hawaii, or is that as big a challenge?
You can. I did. That was the first thing that I really chased when I joined 6 meters in the 90s. I wanted to do Werkdahl states, and I was able to do it. How long did it take? I don't know, a couple or several years, because you kind of have to be around long enough. And in the summers, during sporadic E season, you want to be around a lot because that's when you get the shorter hop stuff that will allow you to fill in states that are maybe closer in versus those longer ones. Alaska, there are times we get openings, and I believe you will too, in W8 land that are 20 and 30 over 9 paths between us and Alaska. And probably Hawaii would probably be the most difficult one because we do get multi-hop sporadic E openings into Hawaii, but those are just not quite as common. And sometimes they're beneficial to have a little bigger antenna and a little more power. So you're going to need a really solid opening to get Hawaii. But the good news is that there are hams that live there, Bill. So there are guys there with nine elements and a kilowatt. Okay, so if they've got some horsepower on their end of the link, that's obviously going to help enable a QSO with the overall effective radiated power of the total link.
Okay. The funny thing with 160 for me was I had 49 confirmed WAS, and that included Hawaii and Alaska, and I couldn't work Missouri to save my life. So
Wow.
I waited until the last year's ARL 160 meter contest, and I was able to get them. Is that a good strategy on six to work some of the VHF contests?
Absolutely. When you're going after worked all states, the contests can be very helpful. The other thing for me, being in the upper Midwest, that helped was being here during the summer months when there are thunderstorms and that storm activity, because it seems that there's a direct correlation between that storm activity and sporadic E propagation. In addition to that, those of us doing sporadic E sort of set aside July 4th plus or minus about 2 weeks. Okay, so July 4th plus or minus about 2 weeks is the time that we want to never go on vacation, because those times you will sometimes get abrupt sporadic E propagation, even into Europe, sometimes Caribbean, but if you're gone for those, you miss out. So yeah, the 4th of July plus or minus a couple of weeks just seems to be an extra magic time for sporadic E propagation.
Wow, very cool. Really, really different. What I miss, Joe? What gets you excited, Joe, about 6 meters?
I'm just crazy about it.
He,
So
Dave, he likes anything with six. So he's a 160 guy, a 6 meter guy, and he's known as the grandfather of 60. So he likes that number.
they're all three tough bands, I think, Dave, and it must have something to do with the six,
Well,
because they can all be, as we know, we're all on one. So far, this year, I think I've worked about 15 new countries on 160.
congratulations. Yeah,
Yeah,
once.
thank you. And I just haven't put, I had about 150 countries, and I thought, well, I ought to get on there because I've been around for years and years, and so I've been playing. So talking about propagation, when should we get on 6 meters? I do get a bulletin, and it seems like the bulletin I get on 6 meters every day, it's just pretty repetitious. It says the same old text all day long. So on propagation, do you have any secrets that you're looking for propagation? Is it sunny today? Is it cloudy today? Or what are you really looking for?
Sure, kind of like if you're going fishing, where are those fish located? How can I make
Yes.
sure to be successful? Well,
Yeah.
that's the ask, and I understand that. Unfortunately, the sad reality is you kind of got to be ready at any given time. For example, I remember a time that I was at my house, and this was January or February in the middle of winter, and I was working on don't remember what, something far removed from ham radio and 6 meters. All of a sudden, a buddy of mine calls on the telephone and he said, "Dave, Jordan is in on 6 meters." I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" Sure enough, you turn the antenna that way, you get the amplifier going, and there's Jordan on 6 meters. What that teaches us is you always have to be ready for what you never would or could have predicted. Really, that's the most direct way I can answer your question, Joe, is maybe there are guys out there who claim, "Oh yeah, I'm the big 6 meter expert and I can predict that." Yeah, I don't buy it. Okay, the experience tells us that you might think you know the band, but it is filled with surprises that just totally take all of us by surprise and make us go, "Wow, where did that come from?" And this is exactly why it's such an exciting band, because it's not always predictable. And
No.
when it opens up to our location, it's just incredibly exciting and a fun, great ride.
And now let's pause for a word from ICOM. Put a spring in your step with ICOM. Spring is when you get outside and work out the kinks in your station. Whether you need to fix ice damage to your Yagi or get prepared for an upcoming VHF contest, ICOM has the radios for you. Consider the IC7610. Upgrade your station with one of ICOM's fabulous HF radios, including the IC7610. With the 7610, faint signals are no longer challenging for DXers and contesters. The high-performance RMDR can pick out the faintest of signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. This is the SDR every ham wants. You can also look at the IC905. With ICOM's 905 mobile, VHF contesting is a breeze. This all-mode rig covers 5 bands with one radio. 2 meters, 70 centimeters, 1.2 gig, 2.4 gig, and the 5.6 gigahertz bands. And you can add the optional CX10G transverter to cover 10 gigahertz. This radio features a large touchscreen with real-time, high-speed spectrum scope and waterfall display, easy D-Star settings, and a separate controller and RF module configuration to reduce signal loss. You can explore the world of microwave with the IC905. You might also consider the IC705 and the 7300. These two rigs are the go-to rigs for outdoor hams who love POTA and SOTA activations. Both radios feature a large touchscreen with real-time spectrum scope and waterfall display for intuitive function and setting operations. Specifically, the IC705 provides base station features and performance in the palm of your hand. From HF to 50, 144, or 440 MHz, enjoy a variety of bands in the D-Star DV, sideband, CW, RIDI, AM, and FM modes. This handheld also includes an RF direct sampling system, wide area LAN, and Bluetooth connectivity with an internal GPS receiver, and more. The IC7300 is an industry first to use an RF direct sampling system in an entry-level HF radio. This high-performance radio includes an audioscope function, IP+, class-leading RMDR, and phase noise characteristics, 15 discrete bandpass filters, and a built-in antenna tuner. This compact and innovative radio will far exceed your expectations. The real HF fun starts with the IC7300. If you are getting a head start on hurricane season, ICOM's IC7100, ID5100, ID50, or ID52 are the perfect traveling companions and should be on your go-kit list. The ID50A gives hours of fun and enjoyment working with your favorite bands. Beginners will love the easy D-Star settings, band scope and waterfall display, voice messaging, and share picture function, and use the same optional accessories as the 52, 51, and ID31. The ID52A is a VHF-UHF dual bander with D-Star and FM dual mode functions and is the first handheld amateur radio with a full-color 2.3-inch waterfall display. This radio has a guaranteed range of 144 to 148 and 440 to 450 MHz and supports conventional FM communications and D-Star simplex, repeater, regional, and worldwide calls over the D-Star Internet Gateway. The ID52A is also the perfect companion to the IC705. Both use compatible headsets, batteries, and the same Android app for D-Star operation. ICOM's compact IC7100 and IC5100 D-Star mobiles are road-ready and feature dash-mountable touchscreen control heads with quick and straightforward one-touch operation, keeping you connected wherever you roam. The IC7100 is an HF, VHF, UHF multiband all-mode mobile with an angled control head, a large internal speaker for clear digital audio, and it fully covers the HF, 50, 144 and 430 to 440 megahertz amateur bands in multiple modes, providing 100 watts on HF and 50 megahertz, 50 watts on 2 meters, and 35 watts on 430, 440 megahertz. The IC5100 is a VHF-UHF dual-band mobile with DV-DV dual watch, Bluetooth, and an integrated GPS receiver. For high-powered base stations to compact and travel-friendly handhelds, our radios offer in-demand features and functions to keep you active on the bands inside your shack or out in the field. For the love of ham radio, you can check the show notes and you'll see links to all of these excellent ICOM products, and I'd recommend you do that.
Years ago, I thought I would never work Japan, and I was hearing other guys work Japan, but poor Joe. And then once I did, I worked 50 stations in a row. I thought I never would, you know, in the pileup.
Oh, yeah. When you get an opening in Japan, it is what I've done a couple times is just get on and call CQ. And That makes for, Bill was talking about operating technique. Sometimes there, the hard part is finding an open slot because, as you know, let's say that we're on FT8. You've got from, a couple hundred hertz up to maybe 2800 hertz, depending on the bandwidth of your radio. And that whole thing is just filled wall to wall with stations. The hard part can very definitely be finding enough of a slice, kind of like finding an open frequency, right? Because there
Yes.
are that many stations that are on there. So sometimes what I'll do is I will look for a place that is somewhat idle, or I believe that there's not somebody else already on that transmit offset or that frequency, and I will call CQ, and you'll be amazed on FT8 what results that returns. Now, there's also something, a feature that's added into WSJT called auto sequence, which I love. And basically what that does is if you get a valid decode, it will automatically transmit and advance the sequence for you. And I think many of the guys currently use that feature, but that has been wonderful because sometimes you won't get a decode until that very last second right before you switch into transmit. And with the FT8 sequences of 15 seconds, it can be hard to keep up if the propagation is that quick. So you'll get a decode and bam, the software will, when it's in auto sequence, it'll switch you to the next sequence for you. That is wonderfully helpful, I find, to complete a QSO. Yeah.
So with the international frequency agreements and things like that, I know not every country currently has a 60 meter allocation. Do most countries have a 6 meter allocation?
Most, but not all. Okay, and that's a great question, Bill. Yeah, not everybody has 6 meters, but a lot of the world does. Now, to put together a list of those that don't, I would have to go off and research that. But yeah, most countries do have at least some 6 meter. A couple of the exceptions, Thailand is one where you have to get special permission, and I know that because there are a couple people that I know that are there, and I've asked them, "Hey, can you get on 6 meters?" And some of the countries they have to go request special permission. So most, but not everybody, has the 6 meter allocation.
Yeah, I was thinking, I read recently that some Soviet hams were on 6 meters, and a lot of people thought that they were operating illegally, and then they had to, publish, yes, we do have permission. And that kind of surprised me because I just assumed 6 meters was, everywhere. So, Joe?
Right.
Dave, on meteor scatter. So we're on 6 meters, we're on 260, 5260, and we're working meteor scatter. So if I want to work you in Wisconsin, and this is for our viewers, with our listeners, would we want to beam our antenna towards you, or do we, which way do we want to orientate our beam to work you in Wisconsin?
Sure. Direct is usually the best. Basically what you're using is the E layer to bounce off that E layer. The key for meteor scatter, now I've done a little bit of this, not lots, but you got to get up early because most of these meteor showers, they happen in the early morning hours. So 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, that's the time of day that you kind of got to be glued to 50.260 for meteor scatter. And of course the mode that's within the WSJT suite is MSK 144.
144.
Yeah, 144. That mode is what you would use. That's got special sauce in it because it's really rapid back and forth. And memory tells me back in the old days before WSJT, they used to use high speed CW for meteor scatter because these meteor burns can be so brief that you got to be just zooming with your CW speed, otherwise you miss the whole thing. So
Right.
the meteor, the little opening or that reflective space just is very brief. And that's one of the things that makes MSK meteor scatter unique.
That's fascinating. Are there different DX windows on 6 meters? So for instance, when I look at the gentleman's agreement, if you will, on 160, there's a 1.83 to 1.835 CW DX and 1.43 to 5.3 for sideband DX. Is there something similar then? It sounds like there are some gentlemen's agreements on various calling frequencies.
Yes, and yeah, that's absolutely The case, Bill. And as you know, we have the whole in North America, we have from 50.0 megahertz all the way up to 54.0 megahertz. That's how wide the 6 meter band is. Now, of that, here's the reality of how that breaks down to what's typically used per gentleman's agreements. Beacons, CW beacons primarily used to determine propagation, typically live in the 50.0 to 50.070 megahertz region. The CW activity has typically run from about 50.090 on up to about 50.105 megahertz. Sideband activity typically runs from about 50.110. And by the way, that's kind of an international calling frequency for DX that you're theoretically supposed to move off of once you've established contact up to about 50.200. And then there's another sort of general calling frequency that is 50.125 for SSB. Then going higher or beyond that, there's a little bit of overlap here. The moon bounce activity on 6 meters has historically taken place between about 50.185 on up to about 50.225. This is why, as Joe said, the Clipperton guys were at 50.189 because they were aiming at moon bounce. So 189 is right in that moon bounce area. Meteor scatters typically up at 50.260. Q65 terrestrial typically congregates around 50.275. And then, of course, FT8. There are two primary frequencies, 50.313 and then 50.323 megahertz. And then, of course, if you want to go way up higher, I'm told there are FM repeaters at 52 megahertz and above. But then you meet the practical reality of how do you get an antenna that is broadbanded enough to cover 4 megahertz of spectrum?
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
One of my favorites is I have a low Q design antenna. It's got loop fed array and it's got a loop as your driven element, and that gives you that low Q wider bandwidth, so you can get easily 500 kilohertz of bandwidth out of that. Where in the old days, the legacy antennas were more designed to be high Q, squeeze and crank as much gain out of that antenna as you can get. The problem with high Q is it's very narrow bandwidth. And now with all the elbow room and bandwidth needed to do these different modes, that kind of almost becomes a disadvantage. But yeah, the I hope that answers the where the
It
spectrum
does.
questions.
Yeah, Joe.
Dave, talking, since you're a big moon bounce guy, and can a station with a six element beam stationary on a tower, you know, it's horizontal, can he or she work moon bounce?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, Joe. As a matter of fact, a number of the contacts that I have made did that. The key there is aiming the antenna straight away at the horizon when the moon crosses the horizon. So you aim the antenna at the rising moon, or you aim the antenna at the setting moon, and you will have about, depending on the height of the antenna and the pattern of the antenna, about 21 degrees of elevation capability because of the vertical aperture of that lobe, the primary lobe. And you get multiple lobes. You'll typically get a main lobe down low, you'll get other lobes up higher. And so you have multiple lobes to work through. And there are a number of stations that have done that very thing. They don't elevate the antenna. Now, that's also advantageous because you get something called ground gain, which basically means as you aim an antenna straight across the horizon, that signal accumulates along the Earth's surface on the way to the moon. Okay, that's ground gain. That's part of the secret sauce that ZL1RS leveraged when he called me with a single dipole and worked me.
Wow.
The
That's
reason
crazy.
I ask, I always, some of my buddies did this moon bounce thing like you, but I always thought, well, I didn't want another tower and all this H-frame thing. And that's the reason that I'm asking the question. So we need to get it as the moon's coming up or going down. And what's that time frame? Would we have 5 minutes, 10 minutes? What would you speculate?
Yeah, great questions, Joe. And then there are a couple other things I need to provide as an answer to your original question. The time varies. There's software. I like Moonsked by the late GM Ford JJJ. It's still available. It's free software compiled for Windows, Mac, or Linux. It's called Moonsked, Sked. That software allows you to plan when and determine when the Moonrise windows or Moonset windows are for any locations. All you got to do is put in the grid square for each end, and you calculate based on that. Now, that being said, the other requirements that makes EME successful or inhibit it is the noise around your QTH. Okay. Noise is an increasing problem for all of us. And so if you've got a low electrical noise QTH, you got the possibility to do EME. On the other hand, there have been stations, for example, 3B9 Fox Radio has had some noise issues at his QTH. Okay, that means unless you got really strong signals, you're not going to hear, he won't hear us. All right, so noise is one factor. The other thing is you typically want your feed line loss to be less than 1 dB. And that means all the way from your six element antenna all the way to your radio, that whole path needs to be less than 1 dB. Think Andrew Heliax. Okay. That really is as long as you can manage some kind of a rotor loop. And then also think minimum splices. Okay. Minimum connections in your coax, because every one of those connections typically adds at least 0.1 dB loss. You might go, well, so what? Here's the thing. On Moonbounce, every 0.1 dB matters. And we almost get fanatical about going for signal-to-noise ratio because it's a weak signal mode where 93% of everything you throw at the moon is absorbed. On a good day, you get 7%. And this is why big antennas are required. This is why every 0.1 dB matters. So good feed line, less than 1 dB loss, low noise QTH. Those are the other keys that will enable or inhibit EME.
Okay, and I fit into all of that because I got big cable. I got 2¼-inch running, so I'm okay.
Yes, if you want to try that sometime, let me know.
So
We'll
what
get
was
going.
that that moon set?
Moonsked. And I will have all this in the show notes, but it's Moonsked, Sked. And it's, I believe it's GM Ford JJJ.
Correct. And he has that software available on the internet. I mean, he passed away a number of years back, but he made it freely available. It will run on Windows 10 Pro. I've also got it on my primary computer as a Mac, but on the Mac, it will only run up to certain operating systems because of, because they change OSs for security. And then it runs on some Linux versions also. But yeah, GM Ford JJJ's Moonsked is my favorite. There are others also, but that one is designed by a Moonbounce guy for Moonbounce, and it's just user-friendly and really wonderful.
Wow.
I think what's so interesting about this, Bill and Dave, to me today, I've been on 6 meters 53 years, and I've never done moon bounce. You think after a while this old guy should have tried it all, but you think, well, I can't do that. I don't know how. I'm not smart enough. I don't have the right equipment. And after listening to you, Dave, it seems like hell, it's all possible.
It is, Joe, and I would love to welcome you to the Moonbounce community. However, here comes my standard warning. There is no cure, Joe. Once you're hooked, there is no cure. You end up putting up stupid big antennas and doing really crazy things. It's just, it's very exciting. The other thing I should say, you have to add some settings in WSJT. Because the trip to the moon and back is about 2.7 seconds, you have to enable the settings. And if anybody's interested in that, we'll take that offline to a different discussion. But I have a document that gives screenshots of how to do that. So basically, you got to make sure that you've got the certain features turned on in WSJT to enable EME decodes. And that's the other thing that's important. That's required whether you use WSJT, WSJT Improved, whatever, MSHV, any of those. Yes.
Wow. Well, Joe's lucky because he's got 40 some acres and his wife has a climbing belt. So,
Terrific.
so we'll see what happens. Well, I do have a lot of this captured in the show notes, and Dave has graciously agreed to come back and I would guess a few weeks we'll set something up and we're going to dive into this EME because It's pretty amazing. And this is it's cool to me because, you know, years and years, so years ago, like when my father was doing everything, he built everything, and, you know, he was into this tank circuits and doing all these things, and it's all evolved now, right? So we get much more complete equipment. Well, this sounds like a whole new frontier where if somebody really wanted to get technical with life again, there's a great opportunity to do that here. So, boy, I can't wait to jump on six, and I can't wait to hear about EME. Joe, anything I forgot?
No, boy, this has been outstanding.
Been great. Yeah. Wow. I hope your students know how lucky they are, Dave.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you. And I really appreciate the talk with you guys as well. This has been a lot of fun. And yeah, I would love to welcome everyone who's interested into this, into 6 meters. It's just incredible fun. And yeah, it's kind of a new frontier, and it's unique because of the propagation modes. So Wow. Thank you so much.
You know, I always said, Dave, 6 meters is like drinking beer. You have to have a taste for it. So, do you agree?
Great. Yeah, that's great. And of course, some beers are better than others. So I would say, yeah, 6 meters might be more fun. Uh-oh, we're going to risk irritating the HF guys. I'm an HF.
That's okay. You're HF.
6 meters is a great beer.
I thought you were going to talk about our breweries on the air contest, Joe. I guess you're not. So
I'll let you do that.
All right. Well, Dave, thank you so much. And I will be back in touch, and we'll definitely bring you back and talk about EME. And Joe, I appreciate your time, and have a good day.
Yeah, thank you very much. Nice to meet you, Dave.
Great.
Yes, job. Dave. Thank you
we'll
so much.
We'll see you next time, buddy.
We'll see you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the DX Mentor Podcast. I would like to thank our sponsors, ICOM America, The Daily DX, DX Engineering, and the Southwest Ohio DX Association. You won't find anyone more committed to DX than these sponsors. I would especially like to thank our gurus on this podcast, Dave, KJ9I, and Joe, W8GEX. I would love to have your feedback, answer your questions, and provide help with any DX or amateur radio issues that you may have. If you need more clarification on something or you just have a question, email me at thedxmentor@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter using the DX Mentor as the handle. All of the references that we made in the show will be in the show notes, so you can follow it that way as well. You will soon be able to watch this particular presentation on YouTube under the DX Mentor channel. Please drop me a line if you've achieved an all-time new one, received recognition, or have a DX event you would like me to mention. I'd be happy to do that. If you're enjoying the DX Mentor podcast, please hit the subscribe button. You can also click like if you found this one particularly interesting. If you don't want to subscribe, please drop me a note and at least let me know why so I can get better. 7-3 for this episode, and thanks to my XYL, Karen, for her love and support.